The Bucks blowing the Heat out last night. What's different about that matchup this season from last year? And Donovan Mitchell cleared for game two, but you're going to want to hear what he said about missing game one. And after a rough game one themselves, how do you expect the Lakers and AD to respond tonight in game two? Sit back, relax. You're going to want to avoid the flagrant fouls because the jump starts now.
Welcome to The Jump, presented by Dell.
Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. I'm joined by our WNBA, NBA, college basketball analyst. She does it all, Monica McNutt. And, of course, I got to shout out Georgetown because I always got to shout out Georgetown. And then must shout out this man, eight-time All-Star, Vince Carter.
In the building.
In the studio. You saw what happened to the rim over here when he was in the studio yesterday. You never know. Jackie McMullen also going to join us later in the show. First, though, let's rewind back to about 10 days ago when the Bucks and Heat were playing each other on the final weekend of the regular season. Milwaukee had already wrapped up the three seed in the East, but Miami was still jostling for positioning in the super tight middle area of the standings, which meant that the Bucks had an interesting opportunity. Did they want to rest their key players and just let the Heat get the W? If they went that route, it would totally reorder the postseason bracket. The Heat would have climbed to the fifth spot to play the Hawks in the first round, while the Bucks would have drawn the Knicks and gotten to avoid the Miami team that bumped them out of the playoffs last year. It was tempting, surely, but in the end, the Bucks decided to bet on themselves. They had been working all season to make this year's Milwaukee squad different, shifting everything from playing style to personnel, and they truly believed they had built a tougher, smarter group. What better way to test that then than to face down the same opponent that had bullied them just a year earlier? So the Bucks decided to play that regular season game to win. They indeed ended up with the Miami Heat in the first round of the playoffs, and in the time since, have shown exactly why they were not scared of the matchup. They won game one with a scrappy effort in overtime, and in last night's game two, oh my, the Bucks didn't just blow the doors off the Heat, they blew away the engine, the bumpers, the windshield wipers. In the first quarter alone, they sank one, two, three, four. You can count them with me as they go across the screen here. Up to 10 three-pointers. 10! By the time the quarter was over, Milwaukee was up by 26 points. That is tied for the largest first quarter lead a team has ever had in the history of the NBA playoffs. Which is saying something, considering the history of the NBA playoffs goes back 75 years. Saying even more was the way the Bucks jumped out to that huge number. Jrue Holiday managed the offense like a maestro, picking at Miami's double teams, feeding hot-handed reserve Bryn Forbes. Giannis kept pressure in the interior, and the Bucks as a whole were relentless defensively, especially in transition. And they stayed that way for the rest of the game, keeping their discipline even after this happened in the third quarter. Watch Trevor Ariza here. He takes Giannis down right under the hoop. Oh. Different one here, but here we've got Giannis doing a little soccer dribble during a stoppage in play. You can keep going here, obviously. Showing with the stare down there, you know, how he felt about how threatening the Heat were at that moment. Afterward, Giannis noted he actually wanted to be a soccer player when he was growing up in Greece, which I understand, but also I would say he ended up picking the profession that, as we saw last night, suits him a whole lot better. Milwaukee now up 2-0 in this series. And if we look at past patterns in the NBA, teams that win the first two games of a seven-game series, they go on to win 94% of the time. Not bad for a Bucks team who about 10 days ago decided they didn't need to run from anyone and are now going out and proving why. So Vince, to you, what is the difference when you look at the Bucks Heat matchup last year to this year? What do you think is the most sort of standout thing that's making the difference to you?
Jrue Holiday.
Yeah.
First and foremost, Jrue Holiday, but their acquisitions of Forbes, Tucker, Bobby Portis, been great, because what it has done is open the floor up for Giannis when to play one-on-one and not have to shoot the jump shot, what he's not comfortable doing all the time. So I think now Jrue Holiday is able to create, and when they're stagnant, he goes out there, like you said, a maestro, making plays. And then defensively, he doesn't have to guard the best player all the time because they have Tucker. PJ can go out there and guard the center, and they can play small and put Giannis at the four, and he doesn't have to play the five. And, you know, with these guys, they could do so many things. And then Brent Forbes shoots the lights out, which now you can't help off him. Who do you help off of now because of all the shooters? So I think Jrue Holiday is the head of that group, and then everybody else plays the role to perfection.
Yeah.
I'd have to agree, VC. Jrue Holiday is the first person you think of. I mean, he had 15 assists the other day, guys. Now, I know literally everything was clicking for the Bucks, but just not only what he does in terms of orchestrating the offense, I think the grit that he brings. We know that this squad has been successful in the regular seasons in the past, but there's an extra level that you got to kick into in the postseason, as you know, VC. But I also kind of think, and the numbers don't necessarily bear this out, and perhaps it is the addition of Holiday, I think Chris Middleton this year has been a little bit more aggressive. He's taken maybe one more shot statistically than he took last year, but it just feels like everybody is now in the right place because of Jrue Holiday, and you obviously know what Giannis brings to the table. So I think in this series, they really looked to punch first, and they have done that with great force.
Well, I'll add to that. I think for Chris Middleton, he doesn't have to be the playmaker. He can score and just do his job. Shoot the ball and score. He doesn't have to make plays because you have this guy right here, Jrue Holiday, taking that for them. And I think it has made the game easier for these guys. And, yes, they made the right decision. Go out there and play. Go win. We want the Miami Heat.
We want them.
Because we are capable of winning this series.
Yeah, and look, it explains why they gave up so much in that trade for Jrue Holiday, because he not only brings all that stuff you guys are talking about, he brings toughness, right? You mentioned Vince, PJ Tucker also. I was in the bubble last year. That series between the Bucks and Heat, there was no question Miami was the tougher team. They had tougher will. They had more toughness physically. And in this series so far, the Bucks have been the tougher team.
Absolutely.
PJ Tucker brings that toughness. And if you look at some of the stats, right, Miami has not looked like Miami in some of those toughness statistics. Just look at rebounding. Last night, Miami got out-rebounded 61-36. That's insane for a Heat team. And then look at some of these other more offensive numbers, right? The points allowed, the points that they are, in fact, scoring less. The shooting percentages are way down, especially if you look at that field goal percentage. So I do expect in the next couple days, Eric Spoelstra is such a good coach. He is going to make sure that those players feel all of his adjustments in practice and get that toughness going in game three that we haven't quite seen as much in this series as last year. But boy, the Bucks look like they're ready, and I guess they knew that they were ready just 10 days ago. Pretty impressive. All right, I want to take a look at today's magic moment brought to you by Walt Disney World Resort. Dame Lillard on fire at the start of last night. Actual human fire, hitting 8 threes in the first half alone. That tied a playoff record that stood for 20 years. A record, in fact, held by who?
Oh.
Who in this room?
Yeah.
Oh, not me. Monica, it was not me. Vince, the record he tied was against a team that I followed very, very closely, Allen Iverson's Sixers back in 2001. Please take us back to that series and when you set
that
record.
Where do we start? That was an unbelievable series, back and forth. I mean, a lot happened with the graduation, as we know, which is still a monumental, proud moment for me. And that sits at my front door of my house. But I tell you, it was a response game for me because Allen Iverson, being Allen Iverson, got the job done, scoring 54, I think, that night, the game before. And then I had to respond and just do my job and make the first one, make the second one, even make the third one. And after a while, you're shooting, you're like, things are going well. I'm going to keep shooting. And every shot that I took, I wanted a pick and roll because the big was sitting back, and I shot the three. And then there's one three, I think my eighth three, to where I tipped the ball to the corner. I run to the corner. I remember looking down the corner, make sure my feet behind the three-point line to shoot the three, and it goes in. So when you're in a zone, and particularly from three, and I wasn't shooting from the distance that Dame was shooting in that game, it was a great moment. I needed it. That's what I needed to do for my team. So, I know what Dame was going through that night. Just unbelievable. It's hard to stop. How do you guard a logo three?
I mean,
I don't know how.
Yeah. It's interesting you asked that question, because reportedly at halftime, right, Aaron Gordon went in and asked the coaches, let me guard them. Let me guard him. I got him, was the quote. So Lillard pointed out that after the game, he rarely sees one-on-one coverages. So he didn't credit Gordon completely for shutting him down. No surprise there. But he said it was a combination of different looks. Regardless of what it was, he was held to 10 points in the second half. So, Monica, did the way last night unfolded, certainly the way Nikola Jokic stormed back. Vince just talked about how he had a lot to prove in the series we were talking about from 2001. A lot of people in Nikola Jokic's ear between game one and two. He came out like a house of fire last night's game. Did it change your outlook on this series overall?
No, not really, Rachel. I still think this series will ultimately go seven. I actually had the Portland Trailblazers getting it done on the road. But I will credit Aaron Gordon. I believe that story 100%. He has the unique combination of the length and the agility to really disrupt Dame. But we know this, guys. The nature of the series is then to go and make adjustments. So if we continue to see this matchup moving forward, I expect Dame to look to use a little bit more of his quickness, create a little bit more pick and roll action, and just really make Aaron Gordon work on the defensive side of the ball. But I mean, you can't say enough about Jokic. Again, this is like that first punch, counterpunch. The Blazers stole one, and the Nuggets were not going to let that happen again.
And what I like about the what Aaron Gordon did, what we see here, Jokic, first of all, I'm going to say the one thing about Jokic, what he did, he had five assists instead of one assist. And that makes a huge difference. It's not a triple-double, but five assists. And maybe we could add the hockey assist to that because
he
makes the pass out of the double team, which is a swing to an open three. And obviously the initial, he doesn't get the credit for it, but he gets the hockey assist. And I think him moving the ball, making plays for other guys is important, and them knocking down shots. They have five guys in double figures.
Yep.
That's what they need to do. And with Aaron Gordon, I think it's a great move because even if he gets beat off the dribble by Dame Lillard, he's athletic enough, he's quick enough to block shots and make things tough for him. Yep. And when he takes those long threes, yes, you don't guard way out to the logo, but 6'9", 6'10", with his wingspan makes a difference. So, yes, they will make an adjustment, but I think when you're seeing a 6'10" contest as opposed to a 6'2", 6'3", it's a big difference.
Absolutely. It's part of what Aaron Gordon was brought in there to do. And to his credit, he has taken that role on. He came in and right away told the guys in the locker room, I don't need to be the scorer. I'm going to do the dirty work. I want to be your guy defensively. I really admire him for that. Monica, I have a quick question before we go to break. Have you ever hit 8 threes and a half? Because, I mean...
Go ahead. Tell the truth. Tell the truth.
In a whole game, yes. 9 and a half.
Again,
took me a
still
whole game.
More than me.
I got to 8.
So there we go. Boom.
This is about basketball. I have an important official announcement. This is very serious. Want to get this out. Message to Trae Young. On behalf of the people of New York City and anyone who cares about actually playing basketball the right way, stop hunting for fouls, Trey. I want to quote Steve Nash, one of the great player, great coach. He says, quote unquote, that's not basketball. Trey, that hawk's not going to fly in New York City. Come on. Play the game the right way. See if you can win. I think the Knicks are going to teach you a lesson.
I don't even know where to begin with this. Again, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio telling Trae Young to stop hunting for fouls. Not Bill Bradley, Bill de Blasio. Monica, you cover the Knicks. How do you feel about the mayor speaking on behalf of the team like this and to Trae in that way, frankly?
I feel like mayors should just do the friendly wager thing over food. I don't think Trae needs any more bulletin board material. I mean, if you really look at his numbers and his response to the chance from the Garden, the whole bit, he's playing great basketball. I will say I took issue with that final call against RJ Barrett when Trae was attacking on the left side during the course of that game. But in general, you got to play the game. That includes working the officials. It is a little annoying, but I can't be mad at him.
I'll just say this. That hawk was able to fly.
Ooh, okay.
But you like that the city is behind their team.
I know, but the condescending way, I...
Say his name!
George Floyd!
Say his name!
George Floyd!
I'm hurt. I'm angry.
It's amazing why we keep loving this country, and this country does not love us back.
But I ain't scared.
I just think it's important that we all stick together and we stand up for what's right.
We are all one voice.
I would like to see Americans be more empathetic.
I want it to remain not just a moment, but a movement. Things are continually being changed.
Don't only speak about change, be about change. Show up.
We don't want no more empty gestures.
Continue to stick together. When they get there, continue to fight for one another.
Even though these people are gone, they give me life, they help me find strength.
There has to be action.
can't just be, I would hope this. You gotta make it happen.
At what point, you know, do we say we don't accept that?
Floyd might not be here, but we're gonna get justice for my brother.
Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. I'm joined by Vince Carter, Monica McNutt. It has been exactly 1 year since the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. A lot has transpired in this country and in the sports world since then. But Monica, what are your thoughts now that you have had a year to reflect on the situation and all that's unfolded?
Rachel, as we watch those images from last year, I'm reminded at how proud I was of so many athletes of the WNBA, of the NBA, other leagues, but those two in particular, of using their platform. I was of the idea that once we got to games, we would start talking about box scores, and those athletes refused to let that happen. And so I'm very proud of that. But one thing, I believe it was Dame Lillard said, it's not a moment, it has to be a movement. And so while we have made progress, we still have a lot more work to do as a country and as individuals. And so it's not time to get weary. It's time to continue to level up and make sure that change really is made for future generations.
Well, for me, I say, I take from it, we've gained knowledge, mm-hmm. growth, some change, and accountability. Those things have happened over the year, and you have to give a shout out to the young generation who has stepped up to the plate and made sure that mm-hmm. we're going to get things done. We're not talking about it. We're going to be about it. And I mean, from LeBron James to, I mean, Trae Young. I mean, yeah, it's a laundry list to the coaching staff. I mean, it wasn't just the people of color, mm-hmm. you know, and it was just an unbelievable thing to see. And shout out to the Stack Jack, Steven Jackson, for really stepping up for his family. But just for the movement in general, like, we want accountability. And, you know, for me, I feel like, yes, We were able to see some accountability and justice, but that has now been allowed the ball to roll mm-hmm. forward. You have to get the ball rolling before you're able to really get change. And the ball now is started to roll. Now change can happen.
And look, you make a great point about the younger players, and this is true also of the women of the WNBA. We saw this in Chinee Ugumike's amazing mm-hmm. documentary she executive produced, 144. The amount that players who aren't making crazy amounts of money, right? So LeBron James is making a lot of money, right, both on and off the court. But the younger guys in the NBA, the women of the WNBA, they are willing to put themselves on the line. We saw it again and again and again in this past year, and possibly losing endorsements, possibly losing fans. And they don't have the cushion that some of these older players did, and they put themselves on the line anyway. I've said it over and over again in recent months. I am so impressed with this younger generation of players. And you talk about doing something, right? We heard in that sound rip guys saying, just don't talk about it. Be about it. We need to see real change. So on that tip, on Monday night, the NBA Social Justice Coalition released a statement calling on the U.S. Senate to finally pass the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act. It is a way to honor the memory of Floyd and others who have been victims of police brutality by trying to fix at least some of this problem. The act would ban chokeholds. It would also end qualified immunity for law enforcement while also creating national standards for policing in a bid to just bolster accountability. Doc Rivers, who is a member of the NBA Social Justice Coalition, spoke on all of this earlier today. Take a listen.
I am the son of a police officer. I'm pro-police. This has nothing to do with being anti-police. The George Floyd bill, in my opinion, is a bill that both sides should want to pass. It's a bill that one of the key points is about police training. So we can train our police officer better. I think every police officer would want that. So it's a very positive thing. Equality and justice, everybody should want that. It shouldn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. That's, you know, where I struggle with when you see one person being treated poorly or one race being treated poorly. You know, we've been going in cycles in our country lately. First, it was the blacks. Then we started with the Chinese. Then we went to the Jewish people right now. Can we just treat everybody the right way? I mean, how hard is that? And I think everybody should want that.
As always, very powerful from Doc. Vince, what's your reaction to Doc's words?
I mean, he's on the money. He's speaking from the heart. And like he said, it doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. Mm-hmm. The eye test. What is your eyes showing you and telling you? What's right is right. What's wrong is wrong. And, you know, that's just the most important thing right now. You just want people to step up, and when you see wrong, do something about it. Something should be done about it. So I hope we can get this passed.
What about you, Monica?
I just think that Doc, to me, embodies someone who loves this country and wants it to be better. For whatever reason, people asking for change and improvement kind of gets deciphered as anti-American. It is the utmost way to be American in believing that this country can be better for all of its citizens. And so it's wild that we would be asking for accountability of those charged with protecting and serving us. So Doc nailed it. And I just hope that people hear that these changes aren't about being anti-police or anti-American. It's about believing in the truest form of America, which is truly equality and justice for all of us.
Civil rights is not politics. It is such some of the basic, basic things that this country promises its citizens. It's what makes us a great country. It is not a political issue. It is about doing the right thing. And you heard Doc Rivers, not only with his words, but with his shirt, where he said, call your senator, because we do want to see that accountability. So if you believe in the things Doc was saying, feel free to also follow his advice on the t-shirt, call your senator. We'll be touching on this a little bit later in the show, but for now, The Jump will be right back. We are now welcoming in our ESPN senior writer, the Hall of Famer, Jackie McMullen. So lovely to have you here.
Hello. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Well, Jackie, you're just in time for another edition of...
One guy, what's up, baby?
What it do, baby?
Make, miss. It's a make or miss league, baby. That's it.
It is indeed, Kawhi. It really is. Make highlights. Rough fourth quarter for CJ. First, Monty Morris gets in with the step back. Then a few minutes later, he's going to get nutmegged here by Campazzo. So, Vince, CJ McCollum. Do you think he comes out strong in game three?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. He's going to put it up. He's going to get it done because they know, the Blazers know, that they can win.
Yeah.
They can win this series, and he has to play well and to complement Dame Lillard. So, look for him to get it done.
And Vince, remember that long three that CJ hit in the second half of this game when I thought, okay, here he goes. Now he's going to get going. He just ran out of time. He's going to be fine. By the way, Monty Morris, so give him some props. He had a great game himself.
I'm excited for this series. I definitely cannot call a winner, and the level of play has been a lot of fun. All right, Miss Whistles. Speaking of Campazzo and CJ, this was the third quarter. So we got a little arm hook, pulling, flopping. After review, CJ gets the flagrant. Goodness. Jackie, there were 52 fouls, 2 flagrants, and 4 technicals in this game. How would you describe that? Is it just playoff basketball?
It was exhausting, Rachel. First of all, that's not a flagrant foul in any league. No. This game was over in the third quarter. They should have had the clock running, like Reggie Miller said. Stop calling all that stuff.
Yeah, I agree. Just let it run. I mean, guys are taking advantage of, if I fall and make it look good, we'll get a call. And he got it.
At least he was in the game when he flopped
point
down
taken.
Because, Vince, we discussed yesterday a certain player in Utah who was not. Make logos. Dame did do his best to save Portland, including this heave.
Jeez.
Literally, from the logo, Logo Lillard. Vince, we saw you making 6 threes in a row in our studio yesterday in dress clothes, Jackie.
Wasn't that far.
Did you ever pull up from the logo, though, in a game?
I have, but let me say this. It was a dribble up, not stand still, waiting for the screen and shoot it. And then it's all net. It's not like you hit the front of the rim, hit the backboard, goes in. That's all net. That is just straight ability. He's blessed with range.
I want to go back to the idea that you were hitting threes in your street clothes. That's
yesterday.
Like a great way to pop out your shoulder, Vince.
6
That's
in
crazy
a row.
Stuff.
So, Jackie, they set up the lights on the court in case he wanted to shoot, and then they had to move the lights back when he was shooting because he was shooting from so farther, so far away.
Love it.
Miss Sincerity. Yusuf Nurkic fouling out against his former team, and this nice Nuggets fan blew him a kiss, Jackie. I mean, you know, this is going to be the new meme of the NBA playoffs, especially when a team gets eliminated.
You know, it's so funny to me because Denver's fans, they don't even know if they're tough or mean or whatever yet. They haven't been there enough. They're still figuring out their identity, right? A kiss, good start.
That's called a kiss goodbye right there. Mm-hmm. You give him a kiss, There's a kiss.
There you
bye
go.
Bye-bye.
Well, they didn't make,
like, bye-bye.
They didn't make Melo mad and go off last night the way they did in game one.
Leave
so, you know, it's all an evolution there. Interesting, interesting series. All right, make surprises. Joe Ingles and Jordan Clarkson, both six men of the year candidates, were on TNT last night, and Ingles surprised Clarkson with the award. This was really just such an awesome moment. Vince, what can you say about the season Jordan has had?
First of all, he's had an unbelievable season, and I think that is an unbelievable way to just change it up a little
right.
bit. To you know, with the way the world is right now, what's going on, this has to warm your heart, and he's been outstanding for their team, and they're going to need him to step up if they want to win this series.
Yeah, great live television moment. And when I think of Jordan Clarkson, I go back to the bubble last year when Mike Conley was out and Bojan was out. And that gave him a chance to sort of unleash and to become this guy that we're now seeing as a sixth man, who's a very, very, very dangerous guy for the Jazz, for sure.
And look, Joe Ingles, great temperament, a lot of, you know, loves to have fun. It's not like I would have been worried that there would be any division on that team.
Right.
But by having him be the one to give Jordan the award, it just kind of further solidifies that they're all in this together. It was very cool of everyone involved. All right, guys, let's stick with the Jazz because we got a little bit of drama in Salt Lake. Just prior to Utah's game one loss versus the Grizzlies, the team ruled Donovan Mitchell out to continue to rest that ankle injury he's been nursing since April. While Mitchell and all his teammates thought that he was playing, Donovan was reportedly, quote, furious when officials told him he wasn't. Here is what Mitchell had to say about the whole thing after practice yesterday.
I was definitely frustrated and upset that I wasn't able to play. I'm a competitor. I was ready to go when I spoke to you guys about 24 hours ago. And they came to a decision that that's what it was. But the biggest thing for us is moving forward. Like, we lost game one and we got the handle, you know, excuse my language, but we got the handle going forward.
Were you frustrated with the process that led to the decision, with the communication?
You know, I felt like I should have played. That's what, I mean, to be honest with you, I felt like that was, it's no secret. We all know that. And, you know, at the end of the day, the experts said no, you know, and I feel like we can, like I said, we can disagree on those things, but, you know, that was the frustration. You know, it was unfair to, you know, my team. I was like, man, I feel like I let them down, in the sense, you know, when you're not there for me in a playoff game, it eats me. I barely slept because you think about that stuff. So that was really, for me, where it ate me, where it hurt.
Donovan Mitchell is a lot there. Says he barely slept, said he was upset with the way it was handled. And Vince, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, and I totally get what you were saying about, hey, sometimes a team has to protect a player from himself.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things Donovan's talking about is the way it unfolded. So just the details, if you haven't been following the story, he practiced for the 3 days leading up to this game one. He was actually taken off the injury report.
Right.
He participated in shoot around. The coaches had worked him into the game plan, and only in the afternoon before the game did the athletic training staff sort of step in and say, we don't think he's ready yet. And I'm sure they had great reason for it, but it's just the way it unfolded. You could see his frustration. What do you think of what Donovan was saying?
Well, first and foremost, as you say that, I'm curious to really hear the explanation. Like, why are they saying, why did they say, we don't think you're ready?
Right.
I'm curious. I mean, I don't know if it's out there or not, but yes, he was frustrated, a lot of tension. For good reason. He's an athlete. He felt he was ready to play. He did everything he was asked to get on the floor. But I think if Donovan Mitchell plays, he plays well. Or if not, if he plays and they win, it's swept under the rug.
Yeah. You don't think this is long term?
I don't think so. And I think there's more attention to it because they got beat bad. They got handled. And credit to the Grizzlies. They stepped up and they said, we're not afraid.
Mm-hmm.
We're not afraid of the moment. But I think you put Donovan Mitchell on the floor, whether he's 100% or not, you have to game plan for him. You have to prepare for him. And that's going to make the game a lot easier for everyone else.
Yeah.
Listen, Rachel and Vince, I can 100% appreciate Donovan Mitchell's frustration. This is a guy that's been chomping at the bit to get back, who probably, as Vince said, the athlete always feels they can come back maybe sooner than they probably should. And he was told, hey, you're good to go. I can't remember a time, Rachel, I don't know if you can, where someone was taken off the injury report, and then at game time, because there was no tweaking, there was no pregame warm-ups.
Right.
He didn't even warm up in pregame. So this is just a very odd situation to me. I think Vince's point is a good one. If Donovan goes off and drops 20 or 25 and they win tonight, this will be forgotten for now.
For now.
But I do wonder if it plants a little seed in Donovan Mitchell's head, because I think He can put it under the reg for now. He's a professional, and he will do that. There's no doubt in my mind. But after the season, I'm going to guess there needs to be some further conversations about this.
Well, they came out right away yesterday and said Donovan Mitchell will play in game two. So I guess they at right. least all got on the same page there. We'll have
to be glad to have Dwayne Wade there to kind of help.
Yes. So, no, I mean, that's actually
good point.
And I understood that he got involved a little bit and kind of worked both sides. Vince, were you on the Nets team when Jason Kidd played with that torn ACL, basically?
No, I think that was the year before me.
The year before you. Okay. Yeah. So we have look, there's been plenty of times we've all seen it where a player goes out when he's not 100% and wants to do it because it's the playoffs. But the era is a little bit different. You know, that those gutted out performances, the training staff is stepping in a little bit more often now and saying, hey, hold back a little bit because we can get you healthier for the rest of the playoffs. And that's more important. So I don't know if that's what came in here, but he is apparently playing game two, people. So we will keep an eye on that. Got to get to Clippers Mavericks. They're facing off in game two tonight after the Mavs stole game one on the road. Now, our Tim McMahon asked Ty Lue why Kawhi Leonard has not been guarding Luka Doncic. And Lue responded, quote, I think you'll get what you're asking for come Tuesday. So, Jackie, do you think Kawhi needs to guard Luka in order for the Clippers to get the win tonight?
Well, at least some of the time, Rachel. I mean, one of the reasons I picked the Clippers in seven in this series, they had the two great-headed, two-headed monster, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, to guard Doncic. Instead, he's coming down and he's posting up Pat Beverly and then yelling after him after he scores, you're too small. So you don't have to put Kawhi there exclusively on him, but I would put Paul George on him too. I would mix it up, but I would have those two guys very involved.
I agree. I think Paul definitely needs to guard him. Kawhi needs to guard him as well. I think you mix it up. They have a lot of guys to give him different looks. You can't give a superstar the same look.
Yeah.
So you give him smaller guys,
right.
taller guys, stronger guys,
sure.
and just make him figure out how to beat five guys instead of just one short guy.
We now welcome into The Jump Executive Director of the National Basketball Social Justice Coalition, James Cadogan. Thank you for joining us, James. And look, this project has been a real labor for the NBA over the past 6 to 8 months. What made you want to join forces and be part of this?
Honestly, it's two things, Rachel. Number one, I've been a lifelong fan of basketball and the NBA. I grew up introduced to the global game when I was a kid growing up in England, watching icons and legends of the league, Jordan, Bird, Johnson. When I was 10 years old, those were the heroes I looked up to. And so when I eventually got to move with my family to the U.S. to be able to be nearer and closer to the NBA was a dream come true, not least of all playing high school basketball. But that lifelong love really fuels, you know, why anybody would want to be involved with the league. But my career as a lawyer, as a civil rights attorney in politics, policy, and government has always been about criminal justice and social justice. So getting to combine those two things is a dream come true for me and help the league, especially at this critical time in this country, move into the social justice space and think through policy advocacy that makes sense for the league community and for the constituencies we represent.
I've spoken to a bunch of people who work with this coalition. They are so impressed with the way that you have been able to meld so many of those areas together to find the best paths forward. And these are some heavy hitters on the board, James. So these people who are saying this, their words have weight. Carmelo Anthony, Donovan Mitchell, Doc Rivers, Steve Ballmer, Adam Silver, Michelle Roberts, many more people on this board. How involved have those big names been in your time with this group?
Deeply involved, Rachel. So we had a meeting just last week where every member of the board was in attendance. The reality is this work is being fueled by those members of the board and by the rest of the NBA family that they all represent. So to be able to have conversations amongst governors, players, league executives, coaches, Michelle Roberts, the union executive, to have that discussion around what makes sense in the policy space right now, because we can all agree that we need to do things on policing, that we need to make sure everybody has access to the ballot, cast a free and fair vote, that our criminal justice complex needs reform. But how can the NBA be involved from a policy standpoint? They're all at the table in discussing that, which is what makes the Social Justice Coalition unique. And I can tell you it is a bunch of different voices who have
yes.
different perspectives, but come together to think through how we move into a space where we can all get behind the kinds of policy reforms that we know will have an impact on people's lives.
Well, on that front, you and the NBA publicly very strongly came out and endorsed the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. And we spoke about it a little earlier in the show, and Doc Rivers pushed for it as well. What is your reason for endorsing this bill?
Because we need to get something done. At the end of the day, we've had a policing crisis in America for decades. This is not a new phenomenon, but there is a reawakening today on racial justice in America. And we have, for the first time, people are paying attention to the policy side of the tragedies that we see day in and day out. And our goal is to make sure that people of goodwill from all sides can come together and craft a piece of legislation that will actually reform some of the practices that we're concerned about. And that's what's most exciting about this particular time, as painful as it is. And I want to acknowledge that this is the anniversary of George Floyd's murder, which is tragic, and our hearts go out to the Floyd family and the Minneapolis community. But there are so many more incidents of police violence that we need to make sure don't happen. And making sure that legislation is in place to ensure accountability, to ensure community safety, to make sure that there's transparency in policing practices. That's the kind of thing that we need to support. And so that's why we support the act, because both Republicans and Democrats are currently in negotiations to get something done. And that's the most important thing that can happen right now.
Yes, so important. And you mentioned some of the different areas you guys are looking at beyond just the George Floyd Policing Act. What are some of the other steps that you guys want to take, areas that you want to affect change in?
Yeah, so you've seen that the league has already taken significant steps on voting rights, which was incredibly important. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of action throughout the states on voter suppression. We want to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to cast a ballot. And so last year, when 23 teams made their facilities available as polling sites and registration locations, that's a huge step in participating in our democracy and making sure that everybody has that opportunity. That's the kind of work that we're going to continue going forward. And beyond that, there are a variety of other criminal justice issues that our board members and members of the NBA family and community have raised that we want to consider. There's a lot of work to be done and a lot of work that teams are already doing. The point of the coalition is to shine a spotlight on some of those bigger issues, to take a position on legislation or policy where it makes sense, but also to be able to support the activity that's underway throughout the community in all 30 NBA team markets. We're here to support and serve that work that's already ongoing, and I'm really looking forward to digging in with everybody.
And there's so many areas of this that aren't Republican versus Democrat. They are just American issues, civil rights issues, issues 100%. Of being true to our Constitution, to the Declaration of Independence, and the way we value freedom and the right to participate in our government in this country. Every citizen deserves a chance to vote, and it means a lot to all of us to see the NBA, Major League Baseball even, stepping in to shed a light on places where that isn't happening. So, James, thank you so much for stopping by and really all your work so far this year. We can't wait to see what you guys do next.
Thanks so much, Rachel. Great to be with you.
Thanks. It's crunch time here on The Jump. The Nets' big three went for 82 points in game one against the Celtics. Jackie, you taking the over or under on 82 for the big three in game two?
Well, you know, Steve Nash would like to get Joe Harris, Landry Shamet, and some others involved, but I'm not buying it. I'm taking above 82,
yes.
Over 82.
Very good.
More from that big three.
I
agree the same. They're definitely, they have to score and do the things that they're doing for them to win. I mean, you put that team together, you have shooters, but they're not going to, the others aren't going to get as many touches.
Well, they played a good game and won with some defense, but I still expect the Nets to be the Nets that we know them as now, and there will be an offensive explosion at some point in the series. Could be tonight. All right, Anthony Davis had a 13.5 for 16 shooting performance in their game one against the Suns. Afterward, AD took responsibility for the loss. So, Vince, how do you expect him to respond in game two?
I expect him to feature Anthony Davis early and often, and just to get him in the rhythm and get a flow. And then once double teams and they start to bring bodies on him and to make him pass, then LeBron steps up and just kind of be LeBron. I know he's probably injured. He looks injured. But if LeBron can be aggressive, that's enough.
Right.
And it'll make the game a little easier for the entire team, but Anthony Davis as well.
I couldn't agree more, Vince. If you ask LeBron James what he's going to do the first 5 minutes, he's going to get Anthony Davis, early, good, easy looks. That's how you get players in rhythm. I still don't understand, Rachel, why they don't start Anthony Davis at the five. We all know that's what they should do. I liked it when LeBron said, I love it when AD heaps pressure on himself. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he does love it, but I bet he would have loved it a lot more if he had done it before game one. I think that would have been preferable. Do we agree?
Well, look, Vince mentioned LeBron, and Frank Vogel has said multiple times, I've heard him say this at least twice in the last week, we wish we had two or three more weeks for LeBron to be working his way back on that ankle before right. the playoffs start, but we just don't have that luxury. So hearing Frank Vogel say that tells you what status LeBron is and why there's even more pressure on AD tonight. We'll have to see if he responds. Thanks to everyone for watching today. Enjoy the games. We'll see you tomorrow.
Happy birthday, late birthday to T-Mac.
T-Mac.